Hello and welcome to the Southbound Sports Show. I'm your host, Richie Leahy, here with my co-hosts, Matty B and Rick David. I have a full slate today. We're just going to go ahead and get started with some high tempo. Matt, you want to kick it off?
Yeah, last week I was actually surprised by this. The city of Boca Raton gave Lane Kiffin a key to the city for recognizing their excellence with the Florida Atlantic football team and their win in the Boca Bowl. How the hell? I had to like double check to make sure that I read it right. He had one season where he did well, and they gave him a key to the city. Like, how does that even happen?
Well, I'll tell you,
if only to Lane Kiffin would that happen.
I'm glad you brought that up because one of the sites had a poll. It was like, now that sports gambling is legal, which is our main topic today, Lane Kiffin was winning as the coach, the first to run up the score to cover the spread for the boosters. So everyone's picking him. He's a hothead, Matt. He's going to go ahead, and he's going to get the key to the city. The key looked ridiculous. Did you guys see it? It was big, silver. Like, what's he going to do with that?
Of course it was.
Use it for recruiting tools? Like, hey, look, I have a key to the city. Anything you guys want, come here. I can take care of you.
Yeah, that's he's going to use it like Miami has the turnover chain. They're going to have the key to the city.
If they did use it like that, I would love it. And I think it would be better than turnover chain and all those other fake. What, Tennessee have that garbage can that they had on the sideline that was a joke? No, I like that idea, Matt. Give the key to the city to the players, because that's funny and it actually has meaning, even though the mayor probably wouldn't intend it like that. But or whoever, who even gives it out? Is it the mayor?
Mayor of the city.
Yeah.
It was definitely not a vote of the people. Could you imagine if they had to vote that in? Like if it was a people vote? They're like, yeah.
Oh, gosh.
I'll go to the election. Oh, what's this? Lane Kiffin, key to the city? Yeah. Why the hell not?
I'm sure that's exactly how the vote went, too. Like, oh, yeah, sure. That's a good idea.
I think I heard of him before. Because, you know, it's mostly like old people voting at these primaries or whatever's going on right now. So they're probably like, eh, I think I heard of that guy. He's probably an upstanding citizen if he's on the TV. So I'll write him, man. Because if that was a thing, I'd write my own name in just so that I could say I received a vote to get the key to the city. So I'm definitely going to look into that and see if that's a real thing. Moving on, Rick, what do you have for high tempo this week?
It is actually the 2-year anniversary from when Jose Bautista got knocked out by Odor in Texas. So it was actually 2 years ago today that event happened. So the fight that most of the people remember of this modern day era of baseball, it actually was today. So 2 years ago today. So I just want to let you know that it was that. And also congratulations to Robinson Cano, 80-game suspension. Congratulations, buddy.
Is that PEDs? That's
for PEDs. They're not saying which one yet. I haven't read which one yet. But not surprising, another international player with a PED suspension. Who would have guessed that one? So
it's almost becoming a joke, the PEDs. They're not going to get rid of them. And at this point, I say they should just make them all legal. And if a player wants to do that to themselves, more power to him. He's making more than enough money to make up for it. I mean, what's the worst that could happen? Like the NFL, where the lawyers or players come down with lawsuits that they have adverse effects, but it's something they're doing to themselves. So,
and you could look at it from this standpoint. You have places like Pittsburgh, Miami, Cincinnati, San Diego. They can't sell tickets. So are home runs going to bring it back? Heck yeah. So
yeah,
you
can definitely
look from that standpoint. But you can also say it's cheating and they're going to be blackballed, they're never going to get in. Obviously look at Clemens, Bonds, I'm forgetting a bunch of McGuire, Sosa.
Hey, don't mention Bonds in there. Never tested positive. Say Alex Rodriguez.
His head shrunk. Oh, Alex Rodriguez.
Speaking of heads growing, I think my head's been growing, so I can use that. I've never taken steroids, so that can be thrown out the window now. Okay. Once you get old, I think your head just grows a little bit. So I'm not deciding with Bonds.
It just gets bigger.
It like quadruples in hat size? Really? Are you going to use that one? Come on.
Hey, Rick, I mean, he did bulk up. He did gain a bunch of weight. He turned into a big, burly man. You can't say he did that because of steroids. There are tons of bikers. Go out to a biker rally. All those guys gained weight in hat sizes. And I doubt they're not on steroids.
Yeah, but they look like Santa Claus rejects. Come on, these guys can pose as mall Santas in the off season when they're not biking. Come on. They're not going. I bet if you go to a bike rally and be like, who can hit 500-yard bombs? I bet nobody can.
He never tested positive, Rick. And you're telling me right now that if he came back to the Pirates and he's like, I'll be a DH. And he hit, like, let's say they enacted
first off, there's no DH needed.
Let's say they enacted a DH. And then he comes in and hits home runs and leads the Pirates to a World Series. You know you would go nuts. You would love him. You would get 5 jerseys signed. You can't even deny it. You should love Bonds.
I don't think I don't love Bonds.
My tagline for Barry Bonds is the last great pirate.
No. Oh, no.
Who?
Ooh.
Jose Mesa?
Andrew McCutcheon. I'll say that more. Andrew McCutcheon may be the last great pirate. At least he won an MVP with the Pirates. The Bonds?
I don't know. That's too long ago.
Bonds, I never think, won it with the Pirates.
I don't think he did. Yeah, yeah.
Unless he won it at 92. Who won in 92?
Wasn't there a strike, or was that 93?
94.
Now we're getting into the weeds with way too much baseball knowledge for crazy
94
people.
Was a strike.
So now, you might be right. I didn't even realize. Yeah.
I don't think Bonds ever won it with the Pirates.
Well, we're going to get into McCutcheon because that's going to be part of our Steel City update. So for my high tempo, I'm actually just going to merge mine into the mailbag because I want to keep the segment going. I do have a question that we'll start with the question first that I saw out there that was floated out there. The question is, if your favorite college football team could bring back one player from their history to play this season, who would you want it to be? So, Matt, Florida State, who would you bring back?
Not even up for debate. Charlie Ward. Charlie Ward would definitely be, he would solve all the quarterback issues. He was a natural with the up-tempo offense that showed he could thrive, multi-sport athlete. Would definitely be the one that I would want. Great character, great leader on and off the field. No doubt, Charlie Ward.
I wonder if we can get him to come on this show. I think I'm going to try to get him to call in when football season rolls around. I think that'd be a good get.
That would be awesome.
Rick, what about you for Penn State? Who would you want to come back?
Wow. I'm going to go with LJ. I'm going to go with Larry Johnson because he was a dual threat out of the backfield more than Barkley was.
What about Franco Harris? Franco
was more I would say he was the guy that ran up the middle more. He wasn't the pass catcher.
He has the greatest
catch
by a running back of all time. The Immaculate Reception.
You can see it at the airport when you go there.
Yeah, come to the airport or the sports museum at Heinz.
Just piss everyone else off in the entire world.
Yeah, I'm gonna say LJ because he's a dual threat. So if you want to say defense, it would probably be LeVar Arrington because he was good at defense and he was also good on special teams because he blocked so many field goals between him and Tuncho Brown or Courtney, for those who didn't know that one. But yeah, so I would say LJ because he was a game changer with them. And they didn't have a good offensive line when he was there. So.
Yeah, that was a kind of a transition period.
Yeah.
That was the locker room era at Penn State.
Yeah, he was a good player on some bad teams that helped good teams help make them better. So. He really changed that team. So, but I'll say this: if I'm going to pick Pitts now, I would say it would be Dan Marino because they haven't had a good quarterback since him. And don't tell me Nate Peterman's in the NFL and Alex Van Pelt made the NFL.
Now you're forgetting Rod Rutherford.
Oh, but he kicks in windows in Indiana, PA. No, no.
He made Larry Fitzgerald look great, Rick.
No, Larry Fitzgerald made Rod Rutherford look great because he. Larry Fitzgerald's a future Hall of Famer because of how great of a pass catcher he is, and he's still doing today. Carson Palmer was practically dead throwing a quarterback. Drew Stanton, who should not have had an NFL career, he made him look like a half-decent quarterback. I would say Dan Marino.
Rick, be honest. Would you really want Pitt to get a Dan Marino these days to win like a national championship?
Well, maybe they could have used it against Oklahoma State when they put up 42 in the first half on them with Mason Rudolph and Johnny Washington lighting up the scoreboard. But would I want them to have a Dan Marino? Yes, because I'm tired of hearing them cry that, oh, we can't get the top prospects. We can't get this. We can't get that. We have the greatest
stadium.
They
don't need it because they just beat them 2 years ago.
Yeah, who's crying? Where are you hearing this?
Have you talked to a Pitt fan lately? I mean, all they do is cry. I mean, they can't get top prospects because Ohio State and Penn State practically recruit them away. They don't even have to try real hard. But, I mean, Pitt needs a top recruit and needs some top recruits to be a legit team, because if not, they're going to lose to the Florida States of the world and the other teams that are in that conference. And then you put schedule out as conference games like Penn State and Oklahoma State. You're asking for losses that way. That's why you schedule Akron's to the world and the Toledo's. You get wins that way.
Well, I thought about this today for Michigan, and I could go with the obvious Charles Woodson or maybe Tom Brady or Desmond Howard or someone. But to be honest, I think I'd bring back Tim Biakupetuga. Because if I'm going to bring back one guy, I want a guy that goes balls out and beats Ohio State by himself. And Rick, if you don't know what I'm talking about, I know Matt does.
I know what you're talking about.
I think it was like the 1995 game. He ran for like 300 yards himself.
It was 200 plus. Yeah, it was crazy.
Ohio State was undefeated. Actually, Ohio State was undefeated 95 and 96, which got Steve Spurrier his national championship when Michigan beat them both years, I believe, going into the game. So kind of opposite of what's been happening. So I would definitely, that's who I would take. A guy that I know could get it done. He was injured a little too much. I think that's what derailed his NFL career. I would love to see him play healthy because he had vision and can make the cuts. So that would be my pick. Our other thing I had for the mailbag, and back to Tim, I'll put the highlights up on our Twitter. If people want to see it, I think it was on YouTube. I watched it a little bit today before the show to get pumped up. But circling back around on Twitter, had another guy, I saw another question come up, and is this guy, we've been getting some people arguing with us over Tony Dungy. So the Buccaneers, I think I mentioned it last week, they put him in the ring. This is a ring of honor for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And my initial statement was, why would they pick him over Rondé Barber? Barber was more impactful for the organization. And I've had this guy, it's a fake account, so who knows, I'm just going to say it, Tony Dungy's been coming at us, Matt. It's Tony Dungy himself under a fake account, and he wants to know why I would put Rondé Barber in the Ring of Honor before him. And I tried to do a comparison with John Gruden. John Gruden won a Super Bowl there. John Gruden, he's just got $10 million to coach the Raiders, and he owns part of the team? Yeah, they bring him back. Tony Dungy, if anything, that dude barely won a Super Bowl with Peyton Manning, arguably one of the best quarterbacks of all time. He was getting eliminated by the Chargers in the playoffs, the Jets, the Steelers, and the Patriots, but most of the time, it was even. I think the team he was eliminated most in the playoffs was the Chargers at 2, and then either the Steelers or Patriots also at 2.
Well, yeah, because he never had a chance to get to anyone that was worth anything. I mean, even when he was with Tampa Bay, the team that they always struggled with was the Eagles, and the Eagles never made it any deeper than that. They had one Super Bowl show, and they got bounced out by New England.
That was a McNabb choke job when my man T.O. was out there showing out.
That's right. So, I mean, that was the only thing. You see the comparison when Gruden took over, and when he was with the Raiders, looking up some stats, their offense was out of this world. And had they have not gone up against, you know, defense with the Ravens that we had spoken very highly about in previous shows, and I mean, you could put them comparatively with the 85 Bears as your top, as one of the top defenses ever.
I think we debated about that last year, to be honest, around the same time.
Absolutely. You know, we talked about that. So they ran up against the Ravens defense and lost. And they didn't even have – they had no offense at all. It was just they relied on special teams and defense. And then there was the year of the tuck rule. And don't tell me that if the tuck rule, the tuck game, if the Raiders win that, they handedly win that Super Bowl. Because they were just scoring points during that time period. They were scoring points like a video game. Mm-hmm. The offense was clicking with Rich Gannon at the helm.
Yeah.
And he was just operating that offense about as good as you could do it.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I don't.
But I just wanted to bring that up, and I wanted to say, bring it. I enjoy the trash talk. So if you really think Tony Dungy's a great coach and one of the greatest of all times, I don't know what to tell you. Dude was like a 500 coach.
Yeah.
If you think he's great, well, I don't know what you think of Harbaugh. Harbaugh was like a 700% winning percentage in the NFL. Tony Dungy's like 500. That's almost like a coin flip. Embarrassing.
And you think about this, too. Think about the NFL Hall of Fame. Tony Dungy's nowhere near that conversation.
I think he got in, didn't he? That's what.
Not the NFL. NFL? I don't think.
These are the kind of tweets that are being sent to my way, Rick. Tony Dungy in the Hall of Fame.
That's even embarrassing yet, too, because I could name five other coaches that are not in the Hall of Fame that are better than him.
But I didn't look it up. Did he get in as a player or as a coach?
Well, I looked that up, but I couldn't find that either of where he went in at. I almost want to say he went in as an Indianapolis Colts coach.
That's what it looks like. It's based on the Colts press conference last year.
Because the majority of the stuff has been Colts-based. I couldn't find it directly. But I think that he went in as a Colts. I mean, even though he has done a lot of good stuff for the city of Tampa and for being like an outstanding character person, part of the issue is that...
Yeah, I don't know. You're cutting out a bit, Matt. I'm looking at his stats, but I'm not sure. I mean, Colts, whenever you're looking at his winning percentage with the Colts, you're looking at who he had. He had Peyton Manning, and he only won one Super Bowl. John Fox took a Peyton Manning team to the Super Bowl with the Broncos, and that's basically all Dungy did. He just happened to play the Bears. And then who else? Was it Jack Del Rio? Who won the Super Bowl with the Broncos and Manning? So... you're having two different coaches with the Broncos able to get to the Super Bowl more times than what Dungy was able to do in a longer time span.
Well, and the thing that always stood out to me is he was always known in Tampa as being this heavy defensive guy coming from Pittsburgh and developing the Tampa 2 with Monty Kiffin. But when he went to Indy, he really didn't have a stout defense. I mean, they played good enough to be competitive. They kept it close enough to let Peyton Manning win it for him. I mean, they had him, and they recruited away what's his face from Vinatieri.
Yeah,
and it was Vinatieri kicking the game winning field goals. They would keep it close enough to let special teams win it for him. So I don't know. The thing that agitated me more than anything with it, though, was that it went away from the original topic. We're saying Dungy over Rondé Barber for Tampa Bay, and then we ended up in this random wormhole where we're discussing the Chicago Bears. And
well, I think that was my fault because you had brought up
trophies.
You had brought up the Hall of Fame players that Dungy didn't win with, and then I had said something about the Steelers basically drafted a Hall of Fame crew in the 70s that carried them to four Super Bowls. So that could be Dungy. On one hand, that could have been Dungy. Then he wouldn't have been fired. I mean, he was fired, man. So the franchise, they knew, okay, we're not going to win with this guy. We're going to fire him, and we're going to win the Super Bowl. And that's exactly what happened. So they knew they had a great roster.
They traded for John Gruden.
Yeah, they traded him. And, I mean, it's crazy that even worked out because no one trades coaches anymore. I honestly think the last coach that was rumored to be traded was Jim Harbaugh to the Browns, if you remember that. That season where he ended up going to Michigan, that was the big rumor that the 49ers were not going to let him out of his contract, and there was no way he was going to walk away from the NFL to go to college. Now, I don't know how NFL contracts work, if they actually ended up firing him, or if he technically is still, you know how they own player rights. For all I know, he could still be owned by the 49ers every time his name comes up. in conversations. But that was the last coach I can remember after Gruden being talked in as a trade. I don't know about you guys, but it's just crazy that it worked out that way. Donji, luckily, he landed with a good team with the Colts. But you're right. And that defense had some great guys. Didn't they have Freeney? And they had, I know they had Bob Sanders, who won a Defensive Player of the Year out of Iowa. He was like the same.
Absolutely.
He was the other big safety the year Polamalu came out, or the year after Polamalu. And, I mean, he played lights out. He was just a little undersized and got hurt more than Polamalu ended up doing. But, I mean, you had some great guys on the defense. It just, it seemed like they always had more, and they did less with it. So, that's what I'm basing it off of. You guys have anything else you want to add?
Yeah, here's the other thing. He did have a lot of good players. You know, Mathis and Freeney on the end. Here's his postseason record. Now, this includes the Indianapolis
time.
It's
bad.
9-10.
Yeah.
He's a loser. And remember, he went to 2 Super Bowls. So he got wins to get there. So out of the 9 wins were the wins to get to the Super Bowl. So the other years, they tanked it. So, I mean, do I think he is in the Pro Football Hall of Fame? I looked up as a coach. Coach, not player. Coach, because he was a backup. Because when he was with the Steelers, the safeties were Donnie Shell and Mike Wagner. He was a backup. So, I mean, he got in as a coach. Do I think he's one of the top 5 coaches that have coached? They named him a part of the 2000s all-decade team for the AFC. He was the all-decade coach. I don't think so. I mean, Belichick,
it's
Cowher,
Belichick. It's Parcells, Belichick. You can say it's Cowher.
Are all bigger picks.
It's
are
May. Better picks.
Okay, it's definitely not you. I would say, even though I hate the New England Patriots, you got to give Belichick it, and you got to say why is because Super Bowls and wins in the postseason. I mean, just alone on those facts, you know, even Gruden's a better pick. I mean, Gruden, well, you know, I don't know. I saw it.
It was a terrible thing because once we started going into this wormhole, I started looking up stuff about Gruden, and I realized that part of it was that he was under the same GM that Dungy had. So as the pieces were being assembled, Gruden fell under that same McKay umbrella where they were drafting really good players and they were identifying guys and picking them up. The downfall for Gruden happened after McKay left and they brought in Bruce Allen. And when they brought in Bruce Allen, he basically became Gruden's puppet, and neither one of them were accurately getting the guys that they needed. And they were just going out and just signing all of these veterans. Well, the same time that they were signing all these veterans, the owners, the Glazers, were buying Manchester United. One more day for all these old, aging veterans. And that's what ended up running them out of town.
Yeah, I mean, I looked at it too. Another key factor was Gruden played after they shifted, or when he coached, they coached 1 year when he was still in like the NL Central or whatever. Maybe it was the NL South, NFC South before the addition of those extra teams, which made it a 4-team conference. And I think that really amped up the competitiveness because he jumped right into a division with the Saints. So he went from playing, I think, a bunch of nobodies to having to play Drew Brees and those awesome Saint teams from like the late 2000 somethings. So that's where that's basically a couple losses a year he had to face.
Yeah. And if you look at those teams that Dungy would have coached against in Indianapolis, that conference has never really been a powerhouse conference. I mean, you know, Texans were, you know, they just never had like a top build team ever. And when that team got real top, they fell real quick. Like, their turnaround, like, there's not a consistent Saints team that's always having a good, you know, good runs and everything. They always had these teams that just tanked real quick. I know you could say the opposite of the Steelers. Well, you always had the Browns. I know that's always the Patriot argument why the Steelers tank. You get 2 wins a year, you play the Browns, you know, so. But, well, I mean, like, that conference has never been the top conference in the AFC. It's either been the East or the North.
Well, even,
you know, because the North. The North,
if you look at it, when he coached at Tampa Bay, they were part of the NL Central. He didn't coach in the NFC. I keep saying NL. The NFC Central. There was no NFC South, which is a much higher competition. he was playing the crappy 90s Bears and the crappy 90s Lions twice a year. So he was in a division with like the Bears, basically the division the Packers have been running for 10 years. He was in a half division with them. So, I mean, Dungy definitely had an easier path with Tampa Bay, and he still only won one division. Yeah, I know there might have been, I think, one extra team until they split into four. But, I mean, Gruden was playing the buzzsaw with, like, the Falcons and the Saints, like I said, and then the Panthers even, because the Panthers went to a Super Bowl. They had Jake Delhomme, and then they kind of reloaded when they went with Cam Newton. I know they had a couple down years to get him. But other than that, they've been strong. I honestly think that's one of the strongest divisions in all of the NFL, top to bottom. The only other one I would say, possibly the NFC West. I know Arizona, 49ers, Seahawks all made the playoff or the Super Bowl, the Rams, greatest show on turf. So from that time, like the early 2000s, I would say in the NFC South, Saints made a Super Bowl. So did the Panthers. Tampa Bay won one. Who's the other team in there? I miss.
Carolina.
Carolina made one. Atlanta. Atlanta just was in one.
Atlanta.
So yeah. All four teams from both of those divisions, and there might be another division, but all four teams from those two divisions have played in a Super Bowl since the turn of the century, or since like whenever Texans or whatever they were added. So I would say he went from being an easy division with the Lions and the Bears to playing in, Gruden had to coach in one of the toughest divisions in all of football.
Yeah. So. And the NFC is an easier, it's tougher to get to the Super Bowl, whereas in the AFC, when he made it with the Colts, it was either, look at all the years. It's either been the Steelers, Patriots, that team that Peyton Manning's the starting quarterback on, or that one year where the Ravens made it when they had the defense where Trent, nobody moved the ball.
The Dilfer year, yes.
Yeah, so you look at the AFC, you pretty much either have to beat Big Ben and the Steelers or you got to beat Tom Brady and the Patriots. Those aren't easy tasks at all. I mean,
well, even then, if you're talking about if the Patriots are going to make fun of the Steelers for playing the Browns twice a year, they still have to play the Ravens, who have won a Super Bowl since the expansion. Yeah. How many teams from that AFC East have made the Super Bowl? Only the Patriots, right?
Only Patriots.
So they have one of the easier ones, just top to bottom. And this is salary cap era. So teams should be reloading and competing. And other than what, the Jets made a run? The Dolphins haven't made a run. The Jets made a run with Sanchez and Sean Green. Year. Sean Green, I think, ran for like 200 yards. He was a rookie at Iowa, running back.
2,000 yards. It was almost around that.
Something like that. Around late 2000s. I think it was Sanchez was the quarterback.
Yeah.
And that's been it. The Bills haven't been in even an AFC championship game like the Jets have. So it's weird. You got to look at it kind of from that perspective too, because if the same team's winning it every year, is it really that tough of a division? I don't know. All right. You guys have anything else?
Yeah.
No.
We'll see. I'm sure this debate will keep going. So follow us on Twitter, S-Bound Sports, if you want to hear more it's not 90s.
And chime into it.
Yeah, chime in. But we did have one guy, and I feel bad because I think he's been tagged in like almost all the posts. He was the originator. One guy spoke out and said something, because I think my original comment was something like, oh, Ring of Honor, I guess you really don't have to win to get into the Ring of Honor, which is what sparked it. And then I said, well, I was expecting Rondé Barber, not Tony Dungy. And then I listed Rondé Barber's stats or something. But another guy had started, and I think he's been involved almost the whole time. But it's almost like the Landry Jones thing. I think the Landry Jones comment stopped whenever I actually invited them to leave a voicemail or call into the show. So also, if you have some thoughts, you can call our voicemail, 412-330-1512. Call and leave a voicemail. Or hit us up on Twitter, like I said, S-Bound Sports. Send us a DM if you want to come on. We can work that out as well. Doesn't really matter to me. So we'll go ahead up with the Steel City update. We'll start with the Steelers since we've been on the NFL stuff. Nothing really. It's still the silly season, I think, is what we called it last year. People are still saying Ben Roethlisberger and Mason Rudolph are fighting. I really don't care. That's drama talk. So nothing on them. You guys have anything on the Steelers?
Same old same. They're saying there's still the possibility that Le'Veon Bell is going to completely hold out and wait and until the first game versus Cleveland. We'll beat that dead horse again this year, because more than likely he's gonna stay true to his word and say, well, if I have to play under the franchise tag for another season, then I'm gonna hold out as long as I have to. And we're gonna be arguing the same thing, that he's not gonna be in rhythm with the rest of the offense. And the thing that really hurts is Mason Rudolph, because if he's gonna have some time with the ones, it would be nice to have him there, have Le'Veon Bell there to be able to work with him and maybe help teach him, as not just the rely on Ben, because whether Ben's showing him the ropes or not is to be determined. But having some of those other veteran players that could help him, that maybe something sticks out that helps him like remember stuff, I think it would be helpful. And just being a good leader and a good presence, it sucks that he's going to choose not to do that because of money.
Yeah, I'm looking at it as a fan, and to be honest, I kind of like how the Steelers have assembled kind of a B team. I don't know how it'll work out for them. You have Mason Rudolph, Washington, Smith-Schuster, all young guys, receivers, quarterbacks. Then in the backfield, you have James Conner and now Jalen Samuels, who can do basically everything out of the backfield like he did at NC State. And you have a nice young core group on offense. So if those veteran guys don't want to show up, come on, like we said before, Ben Roethlisberger, he hasn't played a full season in years. We know Bell's problems. He's going to hold out, try to do his own thing. So let these young guys get some reps, because even though if it's going to hurt us this year, we're never going to win anyway because of the locker room problems we're obviously still having. Because it's the same thing every offseason. You can't tell me that all the other guys are all in whenever you have this kind of bullshit going on. Because who doesn't have this? Patriots. Teams that win all the time. Do you hear anything about the Eagles? They have two starting quarterbacks. A starting quarterback's down. I hear less drama out of Philadelphia than I do over Mason Rudolph and Ben Roethlisberger. It's ridiculous. So, I don't know.
And here's the other... This was the other thing that I saw that kind of infuriated me. When you think back to when Ben was younger, going back to my boy Tommy Maddox, Sports Illustrated ran an article about how Tommy Maddox was willing to work with Ben, and knowing that when he got injured and Ben took over, that it was pretty much Ben was just taking the show and it was going to be his. Maddox could have been the aging veteran and been petty and said, no, I'm not going to help you out. Figure it out on your own. And avoided him. But he took the professional route and helped and tried to be as good of a mentor as possible. And Ben even recognized that helped his development as a quarterback. You can't sit here on one hand and be like, I think I'm going to be retiring in the next year or two, and then in the next day, I'm going to play five more years. Like, maybe we need to check him for CTE to see like what's his brain looking like, because you can't be talking out of both sides of your mouth. And definitely, even though he may play for a couple more seasons, it's getting close to that time. We need to start grooming a successor.
Oh, it's going to be close to that time where if he wants to play five more years, he'll never play like the first 10 games of the season. He'll never make it. He's always hurt those games. So then he might come in the playoffs, but do you really want an old, cold Ben out there flailing around looking like an old Brett Favre? Like he did for the Vikings, he played decent in the regular season, and then once playoffs hit, the old age showed up. Because no one's going to play outside. And like, could you imagine like a 40-year-old Ben Roethlisberger playing in Foxborough in the snow? There's no way. No way that would happen. So,
and I want to build on Matt's point too. You remember Tommy Maddox was a draft pick of Denver. John Elway treated Tommy Maddox like crap. He ends up getting released, ends up in the XFL, which I know all three of us watched a lot of those games in the XFL. I mean, then what happened? Wins the championship, MVP, ends up with Pittsburgh. He pretty much takes over because Kent Graham's worthless, and everybody saw that happening. And, I mean, he helped out Ben. I mean, Tommy Maddox played it right. He knew he was on a second life, that he was kind of on borrowed time, and he was one of these guys from the XFL that got the NFL contract, where most of their guys, they ended up back at their jobs they were. So, I mean, and the thing is, Ben's got to realize, and like Matt's saying, figure out what the hell you're doing. You got 2 years, you got a year. Steelers can't play this guessing game. Rudolph was there. Rudolph's a great quarterback. He wins big games at Heinz Field. I mean, let's bring him in. We need the quarterback now. We're not going to be like other teams, and then we lose our veteran, and we're going to be like, we don't know what the hell we're doing. Look at the Buffalo Bills. They're still trying to replace Jim Kelly to this day, and they still can't figure it out.
I will say, I'm glad you guys brought up Tommy Maddox, because just a couple weeks ago, I was out with some friends in there making fun of me, saying, wait till Roethlisberger retires. Steelers will be backed to where they were before him with that other quarterback. I'm like, you mean Tommy Maddox? I love Tommy Maddox. He won that XFL championship. Immediately shut them down because they're like, no one knows Tommy Maddox, but Tommy Maddox was a beast. And Ben Roethlisberger obviously learned from him. He was able to step in, get the thing. And I think Ben Roethlisberger kind of extended the high passing tempo that Maddox brought with him. So crazy. I didn't even know he played for Denver for a while. I honestly thought he just ended up at the XFL first.
Well, I think he was may have been, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think he was actually quarterbacking when Jerome Bettis was with the Rams. Like, they went from LA to St. Louis, and I think he was their quarterback. And then as the bus left, they also Maddox lost his job too as well.
That'd be a cool fun fact. I'll have to check that out.
I'm trying to do that as we speak. I'm trying to get his career. He was in 94 with the Rams. That would make sense. So, yeah, 94 with the Rams, yeah.
Reunited in Pittsburgh, winning Super Bowls. Not a coincidence.
Look at the coach bringing the facts today. That's usually my job to know random things like that.
Yeah.
I'll give you that
the
one.
I tell you what, the only reason I know that is because we were watching Jerome Bettis' A Football Life. And they showed one of the handoffs. So I was like, holy crap, is that Tommy Maddox? Sure enough.
Crazy. All right, we might as well move off football a little bit. We'll be going pretty long on it. Hockey, Penguins, not really much. NHL playoffs still going on. The Capitals, are they still up 2-0, Rick? Or did they play a third game yet?
I think they're up 2-0 still.
Because the Capitals... they've been turning it on, and I'll be honest, it's kind of what I wanted to see out of them. Because I mentioned when the Penguins were down early in that series that I wanted the Capitals to actually show up. They're part of the rivalry. They keep talking how it's a rivalry. It's not a rivalry until you win the Stanley Cup. Not that I want them to win, but at least show up and get there. At least show up and make it high stakes. I thought Tampa Bay was going to run them off the ice, but it's been the complete opposite. I'm very surprised with how well they're doing. And out west, I called it, Winnipeg's been hot. They took down Vegas the first game. I don't know if they played the second game. I think they might have. Because I checked yesterday, but I didn't check before.
1-1.
It says it is 1-1. So that's 1-1
gonna, in that series.
That's going to be a crazy series. So if you're looking for some good hockey, I recommend checking that out. But anything you guys wanted to add on that?
Yeah, and I will say this. Tampa is winning currently 3-1 in the second tonight. Period.
So. Yeah, that's what I was trying to see. Because I figured that if they didn't play yesterday, they had to play tonight.
Yeah, it's on and off pretty much with the teams right now.
Without the Penguins in it, it's hard for me to check every day because it just hurts every time I look. Let's go to baseball. Really all I had for the Pirates was they're flailing. They're dying just like my fantasy baseball team. I don't know who's dying worse, but McCutchen came back to town and, of course, gave him basically a key to the city like Lane Kiffin, but without the actual key. Everyone was slobbering all over.
Well, you'd have to spend money to get a key.
Classic dig at, I guess, Bob Nutting. But, yeah, they roll out the red carpet for the guy. And I saw someone, I don't know if it was someone like with, I think they were affiliated with the Pirates on Twitter. They were going around like, every time someone was saying, why'd we cut McCutchen? They were putting out, well, It's not like he's having a great year. He's batting 250 or something like that, 248 or something on the year. But then I looked at it, and Pirates right fielder is batting 225. So if McCutcheon was in right field, it would be a 25% uptick. Or I guess not 25, 25 points, not 25%. But crazy that they would be trying to spin it in a way that, oh, well, don't look, we cut dead weight. He's not that good. But if he's better than your other guy and there's no salary cap and he's the best, like Rick said, we could have the debate on who's the last great Pirate. Because unless they win the World Series crazily, it's not someone from this team. So, I don't know. That's all I had. I feel bad for McCutcheon. He has to come back and stand in that. I wish he would have shunned it, but he's a great guy. So, like, he's not going to do that.
Well, the Yinzers all came out who said they weren't going to come out because Pirates don't spend money and they don't do shit.
You know what's disgusting, Rick?
You know what?
Rick?
Yinzer Nation came out with all four teeth they had and bought tickets to Friday and Saturday.
And there goes our downloads.
Bought their IC lights, you know, at the ballpark and talked about that one time they saw Mazeroski drink an IC light outside the ballpark. I mean, come on. I mean, okay, you came out, McCutcheon played great, he stunk, you got beat. Here's the thing, Pirates, even though Richie says they're bad, they're actually good. Look at the standings, I got them on my phone. They're one game back. You're playing an awful White Sox team right now, and you're beating them 7-0. And then you even have a more awful Padres team coming over the weekend. Trust me, the Pirates are going to make a comeback, and they're going to be doing a lot better. Because they're playing some pathetic baseball teams. I mean, it's so bad for the Padres. They literally have to call up guys who are hitting 200 in single A. And there's some guy that's 27 years old that's leading triple A in home runs. Padres had to call him up because nobody's hitting home runs on their major league roster right now. That's how bad it is for the Padres. You look at their pitching staff, and it's a bunch of guys that were never good or were good 5 years ago. I mean, this team could make a run. By the way, we were better off getting rid of McCutcheon still. We got Cody Dickinson, who's in the top five in batting average in the league. So even though Polanco sucks, Cody Dickinson's making up with his batting average. So I think it's good. We freed up some money. Maybe we'll go spend it at the trade deadline. We're not going to do that. We're gonna trade from a guy we never heard of. And maybe we'll go. No, we're not.
That was my question. Buyer or selling at the deadline?
We are buying, but we are going to buy like somebody who's 39 years old, who's a left-hander. Pretty much if the Mets fall out of it, we're going to get Jeremy Blevins, who's 35 years old and a left-hander. And we're going to trade a guy out single A.
No, never Rick, he's not going to sell any jerseys. They're going to go with Bartolo Colon.
Dude, we don't have pavilions big enough to make his jerseys. This is Pittsburgh.
That's a big man.
The river's going to flood, dude. And, you know, we've been getting hard rains up this way. I mean, no, I would say if they're going to go for somebody, it's probably going to be a left-hander out of the bullpen. It's probably going to be Blevins or whoever's available. But, yeah, we're not going to give away anything, and we're not going to get anything. I mean, you still got Milwaukee's hanging in there, even though three of their five guys in the rotation are now injured with Anderson, Nelson, Davies. So, I mean, Pirates are still good. Don't worry, Pirate fans, even though I'm barely one. And by the way, I talked to Josh Harrison last night. He guaranteed me and Mrs. Rick are going to be in front row seats at the Padres game on Saturday. He will be in lineup. So we're getting Josh Harrison back. We're going to the World Series. Buy your tickets now. Fuck the fans. I sound like Greg Brown on the worst promo ever cut. By the way, Greg Brown, one of the worst announcers ever in Pirate history. Even worse than Ket Deravonis, and he was god-awful.
Oh, man. I don't even know how to follow that up.
You can't. You just accept that you lost, and you just figure out the Pirates are playing the Padres and the White Sox. It's looking good.
We'll get back to that next week. Let's use that as a segue into the old ruling today. Gambling is now legal. Sports gambling, anyway. It's unconstitutional. I forget what it was. It was like a 1992 ruling. I thought it was interesting that the NFL didn't lobby for it. They kind of washed their hands of it. And I wonder if it's due to all the fantasy football stuff. Because if NFL lobbies one way, they would have got hit with all kind of propaganda ads the opposite way. Major League Baseball, even though it's built on fantasy baseball, they don't have the like the daily fantasy sports. I don't see a lot of people setting lineups or whatever. Even ESPN, they really still focus on fantasy football now. You know how many countless mock drafts I've seen for fantasy football? Outrageous. So the NFL, kind of, they were saying something about the integrity of the game. Yeah, give me a break, the integrity of the game. With all your vicious helmet hits and taunting and all the other, the no fun, you guys took all the fun out of the league and made it this bland product that the ratings are drying up. Now this will actually save them. I guarantee that if betting comes into every sports, that ratings will shoot through the roof. Because it's the one thing that has been held back. And there's no reason for it. At least me, like growing up, there's nothing wrong with it. If you have a few extra bucks, I don't see what the difference is if I take 20 bucks and I put it on a team and then I watch a game for 2 hours, then if I go to the movies, pay $20 and sit there and have no emotional investment. And that's only one ticket. So, like, let's say you have a family. If I go to a sports game, it costs me like 80 bucks to even get in. And that is conservative. If I take kids with me, whatever, you're over 100 bucks. So what's the difference to just go? And what do you get out of that? Nothing. But if you put 20 bucks on a team and you watch the game, you're emotionally invested because you can get a return on that investment. You can do a parlay. You can have four games that you're really into all day. You have a money value. It doesn't even matter because there's some fallacies out there, like the sunk cost. You put 20 bucks in. That 20 bucks is lost, but you're going to watch the game. You're not going to bet and not watch the game. So I guarantee that if this starts to kick up, you're going to see a lot of like the Atlantic cities start to boom again. Myrtle Beach, someone was already joking down here that south of the border is going to be lit. Once they enact that, it's going to be a revival for south of the border. If you've ever traveled down here, down south into, I think it's right when you cross into South Carolina. It's like a little amusement park thing. But once they start letting gambling in, the East Coast will liven up. And honestly, it could kill Vegas because what's the reason to go to Vegas? Casinos? Really? And it would be a way to boost up tax revenue for a lot of states that are hurting. I know New Jersey was trying to use it for that. Now you have it. It's going to be big. And well, I wanted to get your guys' thoughts on it. What do you think? You think I'm overstating it? Matt?
I think there's a lot of people who are... It's not really going to affect. I think for the casual fan, I don't think that it's going to affect them one way or the other. I think for where it's going to generate more revenues for the people who already are either using like Bodog or any of the other like gambling online venues for gambling. If they're already using those, then more than likely all it's going to do is it's going to make them gamble more or increase the amount of betting that they're already currently doing. I think it's almost similar to people that play the lottery and scratch off tickets. If you do it and then they have more access to it, you're going to spend more. If you're a person who doesn't gamble, then it's not going to affect you one way or the other.
Mm-hmm. Rick, what are your thoughts?
And here's my thought is kind of along the lines of Matt. I think to the casual fan, I don't think they're going to care. They're already not gambling. I mean, you have people in this era, and because people don't know how to save money. So let's
guys, making me look like a degenerate here.
No. Here's my problem. I have 3 business degrees, and this is my problem. People live paycheck to paycheck. They don't know how to save money. They don't know about the future, and you know they don't know how to save and invest. And they're gonna go. They're not gonna be able to use that. You know, that extra monetary money to spend in this thing. So, I mean, there'll be people like me who know how to save and invest and all the blah, 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 you know, who know how to do it. And they're going to, you know, am I going to bet? Yeah, probably if there's some place around or something like that. Yeah. I mean, there's places when I go vacation to Arizona, I could go and bet. I'm usually not at them, but I could. But I mean, is it going to draw me in more? Yeah, there are games where I know before it happens, I'm like, yep. you know, Steelers are going to win, Pirates are going to lose, this is what's going to happen. You just, I have those feelings and everything beforehand. But I mean, am I going to do it maybe when I know I'm 100% sure? Yes. But am I going to do it when I'm 50-50? No way in heck. I mean, I think the other thing is, too, it's going to take the backroom dealing out of it. I know in my hometown, everybody knows that there's a spot where you could go make backroom deals and the cops don't care and the city council doesn't care. You know, hey, go to this place and place $50 and you're good and you'll get your return. I think that's going to stop here soon. You know, hey, I'll go place mine legally instead of going the illegal routes and everything. So I think they're trying to cut down the illegal routes. So to go make you go legal routes. Now.
Well, that's the point, Rick. They want their cut is what's going to come down to. They want their cut. But here's my twisted view of it as a fan. Now we're going to see more balanced officiating. And I'll tell you why. Because we've all watched a game. Let's say we're all watching a college basketball game or whatever. And let's say Kansas is down. Kansas is playing Wichita State or something. Wichita State's about to pull the upset. And you know you can go online and put in your prop bet. Oh, I bet Kansas comes back and wins here. And what happens? Four phantom fouls on Wichita State to make the game close. And Kansas pulls us out. How many people will be flipping out that had Wichita State gambling? It will balance it out. It will 100% balance it out. And it might be shady. There might be threats to officials. There might be all kind of other stuff. But I guarantee you that once people have gambling on their phone, I can make a bet at any time during the game. And there's prop bets all. If you've never gambled before, there's prop bets for everything. If you're watching, I had one where I won. It was like a home run derby. You guessed how many pitches they were going to throw in like round 7 to whoever, Bobby Abreu back in the day or whoever was in it. And you just guessed. You're like, he'll probably hit 7 home runs. Maybe he'll look at 3 balls. I'll put 13. And then what happens? Boom! Like you hit on the money, and you get a big payout. So you put $5 in. Who cares? You get a $25 payout. So those are the kind of bets that are going to draw in more casual fans. Plus, if you have it on your phone, how many people play those stupid Farmville games and buy more turns? Like, oh, I'll pay $1 to do this. I'll pay $1 to see if they're going to intentionally walk Barry Bonds this inning and a chance to win $10. That's the kind of gambling that I think is going to draw in casual fans. Kids sitting at school. I remember a bet I made in high school, just like a fun bet for $5 in like a cafeteria. I bet my friend that the Diamondbacks would beat the Yankees in the World Series. And what happened? Luis Gonzalez. $5, best $5 I ever had. I remember going to school the next day, collecting that $5, holding it up for everyone to see because no one could beat the big bad Yankees. So that I was emotionally invested in the Diamondbacks for no reason. It was only $5, but I'm telling you, if this is big and you can bet on your phone, it's not the straight up bets. That's not going to draw anyone in. It's going to be, I'm hanging out with my friend today. I'm going to go meet up with a friend. And you're out and your kids are like playing soccer or something. And you're on your phone bored because they're at practice. And you're like, wait, what are you doing on your phone? Oh, I think I'm going to place a prop bet here to see. I think Tiger's going to bogey this 17th hole. So I'm going to put $5 on it. That's the kind of gambling that I think is going to start to take over. Because instead of wasting your time playing a stupid game on your phone for a dollar or whatever, you can put a dollar down to win 10. And it's going to get crazy.
Where I think it may end up helping is if the professional leagues continue to not show games, like we've talked before, being in the Carolinas, you may not get consistent coverage of the Pittsburgh sports teams like you do back in this area.
Yeah.
So you know, are you emotionally invested in a random Arizona versus St. Louis football game? No. But put $40 on it, and now all of a sudden you have a genuine interest in who's going to win that game. And I know we kind of did that a couple times during the college football season where we'd put up, you know, parlay bets and be cheering on random teams that we had no business rooting for at 11 o'clock at night.
Yeah, but, and that, we even did one on that one free site that gave you like free swag or whatever it was. And like, that's basically, you have nothing invested. It's like a free thing you try to pick. I mean, ESPN has it on their own site. They do the streak or whatever. You pick like however many in a row, 20 in a row. I think they've changed it over time. But when they started, it was like, if you could pick 10 events or 20 events in a row, you would win a chance, a drawing for like $1,000 or something. I think it got way bigger. Excuse me. And you have to get like, you have to be like the top of the month or something. They changed it up probably because of pressure, but that's what I'm thinking. You're right, Matt. If I'm going to sit there and my fantasy team, everyone puts $20 in on their fantasy league. Give me a break. If you don't, you're lying. If not more, some people put 100, 500 leagues. I've been offered like $1,000 leagues. I know they're out there. So if you're there and you already put all this money in and your team's a bust, how are you going to make up that money mentally? Oh, I'll throw a $5 bet here. Let's see what happens. Like, let's look at, I know the NBA playoffs is on the list today and we're running out of time, but right now Celtics killed game one. Game two is going on. It's a 2-point game. My stream might be behind since I'm doing this as high priority. So my stream's on low priority on my other computer for my router. So it might be a few seconds behind, but right now it's a 2-point game. Celtics are down. What if I wanted to say, I'm pretty sure LeBron's going to pull this out. You get better odds as the game goes on. A lot of people don't know that. So instead of betting before the game starts, I could turn it on late after this show. I'm like, you know what? I'm bored. I'm going to throw the game on. I'm going to place a bet. So Cavs just went up 5 right now. So they, whatever, they'll put a new line at each quarter. It might even be, I think it's still the third quarter. Yeah, it's still the third quarter. So there's a while to go. But when the fourth quarter, when that third quarter break hits, you could go on realistically in the future, place your bet, and watch the rest of the game. I didn't even have to watch the first half. I'll know who has the lead, and they'll have a line to change that. It'll be like Cavs are up by 5. The line might be Cavs by 6 or something like that. Cavs by 3, or it's most likely going to be closer. And that's what will happen. So it's going to change. I think it's going to change the way people watch sports. And I think viewership, like Matt said, for random games that you're not a local fan of will increase. Will it help everybody? No, but everyone's not watching sports right now. I think that's why the ratings are dropping. And how they're not going to make it up by bringing in casual fans. You've already lost the casual fans. You're going to make up the ratings in these lower games by bringing in people to the Thursday night game that right now nobody watches. But you'll watch it if that's the only game on TV and you think you're going to throw down $20 on it. So, I did want to mention, I had on the topics here before we start to wrap up. Pete Rose, with this rolling, Pete Rose should 100% be in the Hall of Fame next year. I don't even care. He should have been in it's not 100 years ago, but he should have been in before I was born. It's embarrassing that they have him out and that they're honestly talking about bringing in guys like Alex Rodriguez, first ballot, guys that were caught taking steroids. Pete Rose bet on the game. It's basically going to be legal now. So they can't hold that over him. What are they going to say? Well, back in the day, he bet on his team. He had the tickets. I don't think that he ever picked them to lose. He picked his team to win every time, and he was the manager. So he's betting on his team to win. They're paying him. They didn't pay good salaries back then. So they can't say, it's not like he's a manager that was making millions of dollars. So he was supplementing his salary, betting on his team to win, which meant for the Reds, if you're a Reds fan, you would have to have been ecstatic that the manager was so confident that he would bet his own money on the team. Give me a break. He should 100% be in. And then the NBA playoffs, like I mentioned, it's the boring state. And this is our last topic because we're going over, I think. The record time's a little weird. I didn't mark when we started today. But right now, Cavs and Celtics, it seems like it's going to be a lot closer series than we thought, or than I thought. I thought the Celtics would be run out of the town by then, but Brad Stevens has an awesome game plan. On the other side, it's looking like it's going to be the Warriors. The Houston Rockets just don't have enough. So, anything else you guys want to add on either of those topics before we wrap up?
Nah, I think we hit a good bit tonight.
The only thing is, if you're ever going to consider Pete Rose, you have to consider Joe Jackson beforehand, Shoeless Joe Jackson.
He should have been in, too.
He had a kindergarten's education. He didn't know what he was doing. He just knew more money. I mean,
Rick,
when you consider all of them.
He batted 300 in that series or 400 in that series.
He batted, I think it was almost 400. But, I mean, he didn't know anything. He only had the common sense enough to know I get more money if I do this. He had no idea what he was meaning to do and everything.
Yeah, they had no proof that he actually did it. Like, to lose the game on purpose, he would not be hitting 300, 400. I mean, yeah. Goddamn, we have Polanco or whoever in right field that's not, can't even hit 250.
Yeah.
And all I'm batting is weight.
Yeah. So you're looking at that, and you're telling me Joe Jackson did that on purpose?
Yeah, he had no errors for the series and everything, where you could have other guys who had like three or four errors. He had no errors. He hit good. I mean, it's so weird and everything.
And plus,
I know he was a part of it, but it was sad. But it was those days where you didn't have to go to school. Well,
if you look at it,
an education. They don't. I can't remember what year they think he ended school. I think it was like third or fourth grade. He quit going to school.
Well, Rick, you're looking at it from that perspective, but even from the money perspective, I think that scandal really changed the things for pro sports, where they've realized they have to start paying these guys a better salary, or shady stuff like this is going to happen. And I think I think that was kind of the turning point, because they weren't paying these guys anything. They were all like busing together, living on a bus. It was like weird stuff. They would drive out to get them on their farm and haul them, and they would only play like locally. And sometimes you would just pick up random players in different areas because some guys couldn't travel because their family or whatever. It was a weird time. Now they didn't have the infrastructure back then or the vehicles to get people from town to town. So I don't know. I don't have anything to end the show on, or I don't have any closing topics. You want to go around one more time? Rick, you have anything to close on?
Pretty much that's it. So, I mean, let's hope the Lightning pull it off, and hopefully they're in the championship series. So I think they have a good team, and I think they can score. So I'm hoping the Lightning come back here.
Matt, what about you?
Carolina Panthers are set to have David Tepper become their new owner. He currently owns 5% of the Pittsburgh Steelers. So in order for this deal to become finalized, he's going to have to give up those shares. So if you have some extra pocket money from gambling, invest in the Pittsburgh Steelers. You definitely make some money there.
I'm sure they'd love that plug.
I was surprised by the move, because Diddy was originally trying to put together a group to own the Carolina Panthers so that Colin Kaepernick could find work. But Tepper has a reported net worth of $11 billion. So I guess the high money won out there. Pittsburgh native buying the Panthers. Just another thing that Pittsburghers are taking away from Carolina.
I know. That's where we get our name, Southbound Sports. Moving to the South, still keeping the black and gold love. So check us out, Southbound Sports on Facebook and Instagram, S-Bound Sports on Twitter. Keep coming at us. I don't care. I love the debate. I can debate all day. And if you're feeling up to it, come on the show. Open invitation. And we'll see you guys next week.